I really like today's podcast, Tales from the Couch, where I'm going to actually go back to Milwaukee's win in New Orleans because I loved that game. We'll get into that. And then some of the stuff from last night. Daniel Jeremiah on the college season being behind us, other than the bowl stuff. We're going to talk some of the QBs at the top, some other players as well. It's not going to be all QBs. And then revisit how he feels about the first rounders from the 2021 class. Life advice, and a girl emailed. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. We'll start on Wednesday with Tales from the Couch. Not a great night. And once we kind of get through the football thing, I feel like I need to pick a better night. Like Monday was better. Tonight's going to be better. Friday, I'm not doing a Saturday morning pod, but you get the point. Really, the only night worse than Tuesday would be Thursday, but maybe dig in a little bit deeper. I do want to talk about Milwaukee and New Orleans from earlier the week, just because that was my favorite NBA regular season games. So I actually am going to touch on that one a little bit. So let's start with what we have. Let's talk Knicks, 8 in a row. They're the 6th seed today, 4.5 games behind number 1 seed Milwaukee. The East still feels like 13 teams for 10 spots. That's including Orlando in the play-in race. They're 2.5 games behind number 10. If Orlando had steadier point guard play, I think they're a play-in team. And I do think they're going to get better. I mean, granted, all this stuff is based on injuries and who wants to play and who doesn't. We know Orlando's guys are younger, so they're likely going to play. But I just feel like if their guard play was steadier, because there's certain nights, and I'm not just saying that from the Boston perspective of it, where I like the team. And we liked them before the season started when we were talking over-under. So there you go, a little magic talk for you. The Knicks win against the Pacers at Indy was a nice one. By the way, the Pacers slipping a bit, 9 seed now. I think they were up 39 on Golden State. I don't know if it actually got to 40 points last night. Now, let's go back. They lost the Knicks, lost to Dallas on December 3rd. They were 10-13. There was talk about Tom Thibodeau being out, grumblings in the NBA, you know, gossip world, where some of the stuff never comes out, what you'll hear gossip-wise. Like, I remember hearing something about David Griffin last year, very early, with the Pelicans, and you're like, oh, I wonder if that will happen. Nope. Now they have the deepest team in the NBA and we're battling for one seed in the West. So, you know, Steve Nash is going to run the Suns. Doc Rivers is going to go back and run the Orlando Magic. I mean, the amount of stuff that you hear that actually never ends up happening, I don't know how close it would be for the Knicks to move on from Tibbs, but he's the kind of coach when things aren't going right, you could see players being like, ah, I'm a bit over this. However, they've won 8 in a row. The rotations have changed since that Dallas game. And if you look at some of the numbers stuff, like Fournier hasn't played since November 13th. Rose and Reddish are out. Reddish hasn't played since the Dallas game. Rose has played 4 minutes since the Dallas game. The Knicks on the season are 11th on offense and 7th on defense in the last 8. They're the number 3 offense in the NBA and the number 1 defense in the NBA and the number 1 rebounding team. Miles McBride, who I loved before the draft, but still kind of had reservations about what he really would be as an NBA player because of the shot making and his just absolute toughness. He right now has the best on and off numbers for any Knicks player, according to Cleaning the Glass. So that checks out. Randall is more like Randall from 2 years ago, not miserable ISO Randall from last season. There's still going to be some possessions where you don't always love it, but he's just, you know, 2 years ago was remarkable for him. There was even talk, remember, he could have waited it out, see if he could hit the contract at an even bigger number. He took the money. And then last year, like, man, it's a good thing he took that money. But it just feels like he's back to the guy that we saw a couple of years ago and not last year where you're like, what's going on with this guy? He's 25-10 in December. The field goal percentage isn't great. Brunson, more touches equals more shots, more points, more assists. He's been worth it for the Knicks. He's been terrific. He's 50% from three in December. Grimes has been great for them as well. He's making a ton of threes here in December as well. I am a little worried about RJ Barrett only because I started to really get excited about him last season where I felt like it wasn't a numbers thing. It was just an eye test deal with RJ where it was like, oh, I think he's figuring some things out. I think he's taking another step. I thought he took another step, like his mentality. And I guess maybe I was hoping to see another step stacked on top of that. I know some of the numbers still would tell you, look, I'm not telling you he sucks. I guess I just wanted to see it increase and head in a different direction. And with Brunson, you know, that's where you start to, if you're a front office, you're going, okay, if we bring in somebody else who's going to be running the offense, how does that impact the development of the other guy that we spent a really high pick on? And these are those constant battles that you have where you're like, how do we really want to balance this all out? But for the Knicks and the rest of the roster, you're kind of thinking like, look, let's just get better. Let's just get better here. But when you start thinking about RJ long term, you know, look, it's only, what, 31 games, I think, this season. I'm not going to freak out about it, but there's some overall numbers here. Look, he's 42% from the floor, 30%, just under 30, on 5.5 three-point attempts per game. He's gone from 40% to 34% to 30% his last 3 years from three. He's a career 41.8% shooter, just overall from the floor. I'm holding off on actually being worried about it, but there's some trending stuff there where you're like, okay, maybe he's just going to be like a decent role player. And I think there were moments last year I was like, oh, I think this guy's starting to figure it out. Golden State on the other side, they are now a half a game behind the 10th spot for the last play-in slot in the West. The West is 12 teams for 10. I know Oklahoma City's only two games behind number 10 Dallas. OKC was 7-8 at one point. They're 13-18 now. I just have a hard time believing they're actually going to play, you know, even though they've won more games than we would expect, because SGA has been so good and there's so many guys on that Thunder team that I really like. I don't know that I'm going to include them the way that I include Orlando for the play-in race in the East. Golden State's not going to have Curry now for a month, right, with his shoulder injury, which when you saw the play when he goes to reach and then immediately grabs his shoulder and you're like, wait, what just happened? You're like, oh, that's probably going to be bad. They're 2-6 in their last eight, so they were losing games before Curry was out. And I wonder if, as bad as it looked last night, as bad as it's going to look at times, if there's some silver lining in this again for Golden State, which is always the annoying part of the Golden State thing, because it feels like, wait, something bad happened and then it all kind of worked out. At least that's what we thought with some of the trades, the Wiseman pick, getting Kuminga when they had a bad record and they come back and win an NBA title. I'm just wondering if more minutes for Kuminga and minutes what we saw from Wiseman last night, if there's a chance that there'll be this month-long lull period where they finally figure out what they have with these lottery picks and if those lottery picks respond. That's a big ask because collectively it's been pretty disappointing, right? A Kuminga I still probably have more hope for than Wiseman, and I'm going to get to this here, but the numbers are worse across the board from where they're at this year to what they were last year. His real plus minus, which is hard to have a negative with Golden State. He was a negative last year at -1.5. Now it's like over three. That's pretty bad. So when I watch Kuminga, I wonder, you know, if he were at Houston and Jalen Green weren't there, Jalen Green's better than Kuminga. Okay. So let's get that out of the way. But if you said to Kuminga, okay, you're going to initiate the offense, and granted, like he's not as quick, twitchy as Green is. He's a sick athlete, but, you know, he's not Jalen Green. But if you allowed him to do that in that role, like would Kuminga be putting up numbers despite not being any better of a player? And then people would talk about him as like, wow, you know, keep your eye on a Kuminga type. I think body type wise, you compare him to Anthony Edwards. Again, he's not even close to Anthony Edwards. But, you know, the weird thing about this Golden State system is that it's holding you accountable. You're thinking about like, I'm learning the right way. But I think the negative side of it is like the leash is so much shorter. And this is part of the Wiseman problem as well. Because Wiseman, I have no doubt, like if he were on Charlotte, if he were on, I don't know, I mean, pick any, I mean, even Oklahoma City, you know, any of the teams that are just like, okay, we're sifting through what we have here. We're going to lose games. It's not a big deal. Go out there and make a ton of mistakes. I think Wiseman would be like 15-9 a game. Easy. I really do. But with Golden State and the defensive rotations and the constant problems, and like Kerr was just like, I can't keep playing this guy. They sent him down to the G League. It sucks he missed an entire season. It sucks that he played three games in college. When you watched him in college, it was this battle between an absolute, like, rare dynamic body that can move and do the things that he was doing, like a really special prospect physically, versus a guy that you could tell as soon as he had to think about what it was that he was doing, then it was screwed up. You could just see it. You could see the difference between him being like, okay, I've caught it. Now I could do this or whatever. And then it was like, all right, it's too late. When he's just playing, he's better. When he's thinking, it becomes a problem. And he also, Wiseman, has incredibly bad luck. He just has all these bad luck plays. Like, he goes up, he's about to get the dunk, loses the basketball, gets stripped. He went up and goaltended last night when it didn't make any sense. He had another play where there was a jump ball where he was the deep man and he got beat, which, look, he's going to get beat by a guard the entire time, but that led to a breakout because Jericho Sims was going to win the tip. Like, it was against another guard for Golden State. Was it Rollins, maybe? So the point is, like, the Wiseman thing is really frustrating. I feel bad for him. And when I talked about him before the draft, I'm like, he could at the ceiling be this, but man, at the floor, like, you could be wondering in 3 years if this guy's going to get a short contract to be the third center as some rim runner. Like, all of it was in play. And this might be the kind of make or break moment for this Warriors duo. I'm not even really including Moody in here, even though I think he's been kind of whatever as well. Where I don't know if that means that there's a trade where Golden State may say, hey, we really don't think we have what we thought we had. So we're better off on moving this bond now before we wait this out another year. And everybody knows what the true price of these guys, what their real value is. All right. Denver beats Memphis last night at home. Denver was sitting Murray because of rest. No Michael Porter Jr. because of a heel. He's missed 12 games. There was a report that he's going to be back soon. Then last night they said that maybe it's going to be Christmas. Who knows with him? Bane's still been out, the big toe sprain. 2 weeks ago, it was supposed to be back in 3 to 4 weeks. So we don't know. The top four in the West before the games last night, because Phoenix lost. Wizards losing streak over. Phoenix down 17, comes back, goes up. Then they blow that lead. Beal was terrific in the fourth quarter. We were critical of Beal at some times, but look, he got it going and dominated. And Paul, after a really nice Lakers game against a bad Lakers team, sitting a bunch of guys, you know, he kind of like, I know, I'm aware is what I'm saying. I'm aware. We'll be discussing it maybe in another couple of weeks. But the West going into last night, the top four, 1.5 games between Denver, Memphis, New Orleans, Phoenix. Today, you wake up, Denver and Memphis both 19-11. So without the Golden State part of this, with Phoenix having a rough go of it recently, which is what's going to happen to every team, I don't care how good you are, it feels like as deep as the West is, the top has been brought back down to the middle. At least that's how it feels 30 games in. So we may have to start preparing ourselves for, like, Memphis seems a no-brainer to be a one seed, all right? I can accept that. New Orleans, because it hasn't happened before and there's still been no Ingram. Maybe with no Ingram, it's like, man, they definitely. So I'm okay with that one. Denver, the defense, you've heard me talk about it. I'm always going to be a little concerned about that. So maybe Denver would feel a little bit more surprising, but I don't think it's completely unrealistic, because Jokic is who he is, and he's insane. So Memphis defensively was bad last night. I'm not really that worried about the Memphis loss. The primary defender on Jokic was Adams. Jaren Jackson, foul trouble again. Let me know if you've heard that one before. He played 15 total minutes with 8:40 left. So at the 8:40 mark, he'd only played 15 minutes of the game. And again, it was going to be Adams on Jokic. And Adams, he had an easy Jokic night because he didn't want to shoot last night. Did have another triple-double, 13-13-13. So Denver was dominant for most of the game. There were some stretches where they had to go to zone. It was kind of funny. Memphis did one thing where they screened the interior, the inside. I shouldn't get too technical here because it, you know, makes me sound like an asshole. But they were screening the inside of the top two defenders in this zone where you don't really see that much. And Van Gundy made a good call. He's like, they might have to get out of this at some point. But that didn't really matter because Denver was doing what they wanted to Memphis, which was kind of weird. But yeah, they had Tyus Jones with the basketball at the top, and they went in and screened the inside of the two top defenders, and Jones just went right through the middle of them, pulled up for free throw line and missed a jumper. But it was kind of funny just to see, like, people can stop screening against zones. I have this rant about switching into a worse option that I think I'm planning on. I constantly am seeing it all the time. The Brooklyn-Toronto game from a few days ago was like a prime example where I'd be like, wait, why are you switching off of this guy into this defender? Like, why would you want to do that? Anyway, that's not what that was necessarily. I guess I'm just not that worried about Memphis having a bad night. I do want to talk a little positive here, though. Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's been a player over the years where I feel like everybody that doesn't have him liked him more than the Magic who had him. Or fans, probably is the best way to put that. You're like, oh man, we got this guy. Because he's kind of a nice player. But there's also like some real limitations never quite worked out. I don't know that this is the best Aaron Gordon we've ever seen, okay, in 9 seasons. It's not close. I don't like that term, but in this case, it's true. He's always been a mid-40s guy from the floor. He's been over 50 every season he's been with Denver. Jokic. This season, he's 61% from the floor. He's 39% from three. It's the most free throw attempts he's ever taken. So Gordon, in this role with Jokic, it's just like, you know, certain programs that have a player in college football where you're like, no, they're going to do a good job because it's them. It's the same player, but he'll be better with them. That's what Jokic provides you as your point man, is maybe another MVP award for this dude. He's so much fun to watch. And watching him last night just go like, yeah, I'm going to be actually a little apprehensive. Well, not apprehensive, would be negative. He was like, I'm going to kind of play in the flow of the game tonight. Like, I'm not going to look to get mine. He could take so many more shots and they'd be good shots. And then he won't do it unless he feels like, okay, I absolutely need to take a shot here in a big spot. And then he makes it anyway. But Gordon has been a huge, huge benefactor in his season this year right now, the best of his career. Okay, like I said, I wanted to end on Milwaukee's win at New Orleans. Milwaukee, the one seed in the East, so it's kind of crazy how things play out. Boston gets off to this incredible start, and then you're like, oh, wait, they're the two seed. Point differential is kind of funny. Cleveland's actually the number one point differential in the East. Boston second, Milwaukee is third. So, like I said, this is one of my favorite games this season because it was the Giannis-Zion chess match and how this was all going to play out. Unfortunately, this happens way too much with some of the guys with these massive defensive resumes. Oh, cool. Giannis is going to play on Zion? Nope, not going to happen. But Drew Holiday is. On the other side for New Orleans, Herb Jones was the main guy against Giannis, I believe. I mean, I don't know the total number of possessions, but that was the first matchup, and that's usually what you're looking at. They were trying to build that wall. They were trying, and they just weren't ready for it. I thought New Orleans, like, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm going to keep telling you, you have to do this. You have to stay together. You can't give him any space. You know, look, it's still Giannis. He's going to get his points, but you can't make it easy for him. And if you're out of position or you're late to the help, you're going to foul him. And that's exactly what happened. Giannis took 22 free throws in that game, and he made 17. So that was kind of the game, at least offensively, for Milwaukee. No Middleton, by the way, in this one. We know Ingram's still out for New Orleans. Now, on the other side, Zion was initiating a lot of the offense on his own, or at least bringing it up. You know, getting the ball out in the perimeter, facing the basket. Okay, go Zion, go create, because you can dribble past everybody. And he's, I believe, the fourth most efficient offensive player in the NBA this season. I think Jokic is one. Markkanen, I think, is two. I can look that up again. I'll likely forget and not do it in this podcast. So that was the problem for New Orleans. They just, you know, they thought they knew what they wanted to do, and they did a bad job with it. So Drew defends Zion. But it wasn't just that. It was either Brook Lopez or sometimes even a third guy facing Zion. I posted a pick because Valanciunas, I believe, had 26 in the first half because Brook was just always going to help towards Zion. Giannis did it a few times as well. So Valanciunas is going crazy, lighting it up. And Antonio Daniels, who does the games for the Pelicans, who was terrific, he was just teaching the entire game. And he's like, look, I played for Coach Bud in San Antonio, and he's not going to change. And Bucks fans could back that up. Like, look, he's not going to change what he does. This is what he's going to do. The rule is they want that help to Zion when he has the ball, leave the other guy open. And Valanciunas isn't missing. And at one point, Daniels points out that Brooke looks back to the Bucks bench and is like, what do you guys want me to do? You want me to keep doing this? And Bud's like, yeah. And AD's like, they're going to keep doing it. They're going to keep doing it the whole time. So I posted this pic at one point where Zion was on the left side. If you're going left to right on your TV watching basketball, he's to the left side, you know, not below the elbow, but, you know, towards the Milwaukee bench. And Drew is on him. Lopez, I believe, is covering up Drew, so you can't even see Drew. And then Giannis is helping, and Valanciunas is wide open. There's three guys on Zion. And I posted it, and you can't see Drew if you have to really, really look for him. You're like, is that an extra leg in there? And so I actually thought this was a positive for Zion, because then they started posting him, and it was too late, but Zion was like, all right, I'm not screwing around. As soon as I get the ball, I'm not letting you dictate how you're going to play me and then play off of that. I'm going to make you adjust to me now. And they probably should have got the ball out of his hands a little bit earlier. It's a credit to Drew Holiday to take on that kind of assignment, to try to just slow Zion down on the drives, and he can. But there was always help. It was a fantastically prepped game for an NBA team where there's probably too many times they just roll the ball out. I thought the prep specific to the Zion matchup was one of the more impressive things I've seen from an NBA team this season. Give credit to Zion for kind of figuring it out. Maybe a little late. Maybe everybody was a little late for that one. But I saw some people being like, oh, this is this new thing. I think Zion was like, his passing is so good that you kind of take it for granted that he can be doubled and you can sell out against him like this and he'll still make the right play. But I thought what he did later was like, oh, okay. You know, he'll know what to do. The reason I bring it up, because not only did I like it so much, could it be a finals preview? Believe it or not, that's not a crazy thing to say about these two teams. Santa Barkley is coming to town, and he's delivering $20 million in gifts this holiday season to all FanDuel customers. It doesn't matter if you've been naughty or nice. St. Chuck has something for everyone. Just check out your FanDuel app for no-sweat same-game parlays, bonuses, and all sorts of stuff that'll fill you with holiday cheer. Okay, favorite bets for tonight. Last week, winner gave you the over. That game went to 270. 270. I think it went over that. Okay. Let's see here. Is there a total I like? Somebody that's really going to let it fly. Let's go under 240.5, Lakers at Sacramento Kings. There you go. That's the pick. New to FanDuel? Now is the perfect time to sign up, and remember to use the promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N. The app is easy to use. They're always hooking you up with great promotions. And when you win, you'll get paid instantly. So see for yourself why FanDuel is America's number one sportsbook, and get in the holiday spirit with $20 million in gifts from Santa Barkley. Must be 21 and older and present in select states only. Prize total dependent on customer participation. Wager requirements apply. Gifts awarded as non-withdrawable site credit or free bets. See FanDuel.com for terms and conditions. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it had been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. I was like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. He's a regular guest. He has a podcast of his own, Move the Sticks, Daniel Jeremiah. We're going to talk some draft. We're going to talk a little NFL as well. What's up, man? Thanks for doing this.
No, it's good to see you, bud. How you doing?
Good. Okay. Do you know today who you think, not who the team will take, but who'll be number one on your board?
I would say not yet. Still TBD. I love, you know, Bryce Young as a player. Like, we're just talking quarterbacks. And if you're thinking, okay, do quarterbacks trump everything else? I think as we're sitting right now, he's my top quarterback. but I would still have, you know, Will Anderson would be my number one overall player. I mean, in terms of just position players, it'll be Will Anderson.
Okay, I'm going to share a theory with you. I think, yep. And listeners have already heard this, but you and I haven't talked about it. I love Bryce Young. Mm-hmm. I too love Bryce Young. I love everything about him, except his size.
Yeah.
And I think his measurements are going to be really interesting at the combine. I heard, you know, he's actually even smaller, you know, than he's listed, than what he's played at Bama. And I wonder if the league, because of, you know, the breeze into Russell Wilson, into like Kyler, and people going like, oh, you know, you don't have to be this anymore. You don't have to be this anymore. Well, Russ is a baseball player, so he's thick. Kyler, because he was a baseball player, I think some assumptions were made there. Okay, be fine. He gets hurt again. My issue with him is that when he gets hurt, it's always like it lingers.
Yeah.
Like when he's hurt, he's out.
Yeah.
And Bryce is even smaller than those guys. I wonder if we are pushing the limits. If Bryce Young goes one, as much as I love him, if we are pushing through the limits of the, like all the stuff we believed in, all the rules that we had to believe in.
Yeah.
Are we taking like too much liberty with the idea that a small quarterback can still survive even with the rule changes?
Well, and that's why I would allow myself some grace in terms of being able to stand next to him, see him, get the official measurements, because I still have not seen him in person. And it's one thing. I've had scouts that have gone through there that have like, dude, hey, cautionary, just giving you a little cautionary tale here. You need to wait until you see him before you like shove all your chips into the middle of the table. Like, he is tiny and he's narrow and he's lean. And you know, I always talked about Russell Wilson having kind of a wrestler's build. Like, he was short, but he was so thick and so wide hipped and just kind of a big bone guy. Whereas it sounds like with Bryce, he's a narrow, thin framed, you know, kind of a wiry dude. But I also, he's got a little bit of the Lamar thing, just in terms of he doesn't take big shots. Like, you would watch Lamar, even when Lamar was running, like, he was so kind of slippery and just kind of never took those big hits. He knows how to give and fall back when he's getting hit. I think he does have some of that. He's been little his whole life, so he's probably learned how to do that. But just like, it's going to be, I don't think he's for everybody. I look at Houston though, Ryan, first pick, you've got Laremy Tunsil at left tackle. You play all your home games in dome. You're inside the division games are mostly good weather indoors. So you've already start the season with, you know, 11, 12 games, which are going to be in really, really friendly environments where, you know, size, physicality is not going to be a huge concern. And you've got a franchise left tackle and you've got a big time running back. I think they have some of the pieces there that could help, you know, with a smaller quarterback.
If you're Detroit and you've got this Rams pick that could be in play for the next quarterback off the board if Bryce goes one to, say, Houston, how does Goff impact your decision?
I would, unless you're just in love with one of these guys, and I'm not. I mean, even Bryce included in that, I would say, for the reasons we just stated, there's legit concerns. I'd feel comfortable enough that I can win games with Goff for the next few years that I'd auction that thing up in 2 seconds and see if I could get somebody to fall in love with Will Levis or whoever else they want to come up and get.
So you've seen enough from Goff. Like, Goff has done...
He's a winning... I think you can win with him. And I think they're build that team to support him. Their offensive line is one of the best offensive lines in the league right now. I think they need to devote their resources to the defensive side of the ball. And I think they can play a game that Goff's good at. So I think he's good enough for them to win games here for the next 3-4 years and allow themselves some time to find that next guy.
Yeah, I would say earlier in the season, even with the offensive numbers, you know, because as a team offense, you're like, look, they're actually, this team scores points.
Yeah.
So what are you asking? And then you're thinking like, okay, well, they'll probably grab somebody, maybe sit, and then it's like, yeah, I don't know. So I kind of agree with you now at that point. Okay, so it sounds like you don't like this quarterback class, because Anthony Richardson, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to remind myself to do this. I'm going to do this next year. When I look at like the top 25s that guys have, I'm going to do a segment on this podcast where I go, okay, I'm taking the over, I'm taking the under on some of the guys. Because when Richardson was first targeted as like the 10th pick, I go, oh, that's insane. There's no way. And then I watched the Utah game and I went, okay.
Once he spun around, your opinion spun around along with it.
Right. Yeah. That I love that. That was a 2-point conversion, right? I loved it. And then you know, the Kentucky game and talking to some people, was like, yeah, they changed up how they defended him. The guy hasn't been able to figure it out since. Yeah. But he's still there. He's still there in the mocks. He's hanging around that top 10 area. How is that possible?
Just because the comments I got on Bryce from scouts that went to saw him was the exact opposite of the scouts who went in and saw Richardson. They're like, hey, look, I know the flaws. I know he's inconsistent. I know he's raw. DJ, when you see this dude and you see how big he is, how he moves and how strong his arm is, he's going to be like a quarterback coach guy where I can extract all this talent out of him and we'll be able to hit a home run with this guy. Somebody's going to talk themselves into it because it sounds like from seeing him up close and personal that it is pretty rare with the physical traits that he has. But okay, the tape is so raw.
Raw?
Man. Yeah. It is raw.
Okay, but I think Levis is in the same kind of conversation that physically, oh, okay, look at all these different things. I know the O-line of Kentucky, and yeah. I mean, he got his ass kicked. But if I'm a fan, well, I don't know how many NFL fans really watch these guys. I always think it's kind of funny with the mock draft when like some fan base freaks out because they didn't take the Mississippi D tackle, and you're like, you learned about him 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So maybe I should ask it this. Let me start with this. It doesn't sound like you like Levis or Richardson.
They would be very concerning to me. I think they're total hero or zero picks. So there's a place for those guys when you're ranking them. I always, you know, say for me to do this without being affiliated with a team is infinitely harder than when you're with a team. When I know, okay, I know that our coaching staff has a tradition of being able to develop this type of player at this type of position. I know what this guy's skill set marries what we do schematically. Now it's like, okay, I'm going to rank him and hope to God that he goes to a place that can actually figure out how to use him and how to develop him and how to make him a player. I think those guys are, you know, true wild cards. So, you know, I think they're both set up to be climbers once we get to the spring, because I think kind of the further we get away from what we saw on the field and the closer we get to seeing these guys work out, you're going to be like, whoa, okay, this is something you can dream on.
Okay, can you put us in the room then, like what that's like, where a front office is talking themselves into somebody more because of the physical gifts and the workouts and not the game tape? Like how do those conversations happen? Is there an example?
Well, I mean, there's an example from last year. I mean, there was the example right at the top of the draft that Jacksonville had. And I've been in those same conversations with different players, but it's Aiden Hutchinson, who has all this production, who, by the way, was still a good athlete, not like a rare elite athlete, but a really good athlete coming off a year with tons of production. But you think, okay, maybe he's kind of hitting his head on his ceiling, versus Trayvon Walker, who is like literally exactly how you would build an edge defender in terms of size, length, explosiveness, you know, change of direction, all that stuff, but just doesn't have hardly any production. They've moved him around in that defense. He didn't play full time because they were rolling so many guys through. So you're arguing about what a guy is versus what a guy can become. And that's every single year. Like there's those debates in the room. There's certain positions where I think it's easier to make the case for the traits guy. The quarterback position is a little bit harder it's a little bit harder to sell that just because you're tying your job up into the hope of this thing working out with a guy like that.
Did you have one though from your past where there was a physical traits guy where it was like a massive argument?
Well, it wasn't a massive argument. It's kind of funny now when you look back on these two careers, but we had, when I was in Baltimore, this is one of those decisions that seems kind of so silly at the time, because you're talking about, I think we were in the sixth round. So here were our choices. We were trying to find a backup quarterback. So our choice was Derek Anderson from Oregon State. Okay. Ryan Fitzpatrick from Harvard. So I made the case for Derek Anderson. And I said, look, Ryan Fitzpatrick is what he is. He's going to be somebody that's going to help your starter. I don't think he's ever going to be your starter. Whereas Derek Anderson, 6'6". The highs are higher, the lows are lower, but at least I think you can dream on him potentially becoming a starter because he's got the traits. So we had that kind of back and forth. We end up taking Derek Anderson. Of course, we end up trying to sneak him down to the practice squad. The Browns claim him. I ended up going to Cleveland. He ends up going to a Pro Bowl, and early on in that process, you're like, dude, we nailed it. You know, this Fitzpatrick guy's not going to be in the leagues. It's going to be a clipboard holder for a little while. Then he'll kind of wash out. And then Fitzpatrick goes on, plays for 100 years, and Derek didn't start many more games after that. But that was a classic kind of ceiling floor debate. And I think in the long run, while you had the little spurt with the ceiling there with Derek Anderson, Ryan Fitzpatrick's floor was probably the right decision.
I would have agreed with you. I kind of liked Derek Anderson back then.
I went and saw him in the bowl game against Notre Dame in Arizona. And I think was might have been Brady Quinn was maybe on that Notre Dame team, but he tore him up. And I remember seeing that going, okay. And he was a great basketball player. He had like size 16 shoes. That's about all I can remember about that evaluation.
You love the hoops guys. But once you started playing Kyle Bowler 2-on-2, you knew. It was like, oh, we made a mistake. You've shared that story with us in the past. Do you ever have a pick in the room where it's maybe not as crisp as we would think from the outside, where the pick is coming up and maybe it'd be Ozzie back then and be in charge? It's just like the debate's gone on and on. And it's like, all right, F it. Let's just take this guy.
Where, yeah, not as much with the Ravens. I would say maybe more so in Philly. Like it was kind of, you'd get to that kind of that point in the draft. And I can't recall a player individually, but I remember just kind of, I remember in Philly, we would keep our scouts. We weren't in the draft room. We were in like a side room. So in the main draft room, you'd have general manager, head coach, owner, you know, a few executives, not a lot of people in there, maybe the coordinators. And so you'd be sitting in that room and they would like the fifth, sixth round. I remember Ronald Johnson. You remember the USC wide receiver, Ronald Johnson?
Yeah.
They go, DJ, they want you in there. So I'm like, all right. So just the draft walk in there and they go, do you trust him? I think Jeffrey Lurie might even ask me, you trust him with all of our, with like your job on the line, with all of our success. And do you trust him to catch a punt for us? Do you trust him to catch a punt? And I remember thinking, like, I'm not putting my job on the line to take Ronald Johnson in the sixth round to catch a punt. Like, how do I answer that question? No, I mean, what? Like, but that was like that type of stuff happens. Those are the kind of like the classic stories. But I'm like, yeah, there's certain things I'm willing to die on a hill for. Ronald Johnson catching a punt is not. I'm not putting my my family's you know, welfare in his hands at this point in time.
So that was it. You didn't take him.
I think we took him after all that. I think we still took him, but it was without without my stamp of approval. I was like, yeah, I'm not dying on that hill.
Imagine if you had given this like Jerry Maguire speech. Absolutely. Be like, here's something. I'd like all of you to sit down first in a super emotional, like in the end, you're just this massive crescendo of faith. Yeah, that's a weird one. Okay. What else? It's just, if I'm shopping for something, like, what is this draft's specialty?
Oh, tight ends, man. It's the best tight end draft I've seen in a long time. And, like, you just watch one after another after another. And in talking to guys around the league, they're like, oh, you know, I think we're going to see a big kind of day two, second, third round. And I'm like, look, I'm just kind of getting into this thing, but you're going to have to prove to me that there's 32 players better than some of these tight ends that that we don't see, you know, two, maybe even three of these guys sneak into the first round. Like I did Dalton Kincaid the other day from Utah. He's a stud. He's a stud. Like, and you know, the comparison thing, people freak out about it, but I'm like, he looks just like Zach Ertz did coming out, maybe just a little more gas, like just a little more juice, just so fluid and smooth and everything that he does. Tough. I mean, the USC game, I'll go through and watch all their targets. And I think he had like 14, 15 catches in the USC game, just tore them apart.
Think about it. He took over that game like a basketball player does.
Yeah. Just give him the ball.
Yeah.
He's awesome. The kid at Oregon, the kid at Oregon, Musgrave, who got hurt and only played a couple games, he's going to be 6'5 plus, 250 plus. He's going to probably run in the 4.4s, like mid to high 4.4. He's a freak. Everybody knows about Mayer. You've got Goliath at Georgia.
I got to tell you, I saw Washington projected. That's a Georgia tight end in the first round. That to me seems a little high.
He's a top 50 pick to me. Yeah. I think he goes in that 40s in like that type of a range.
But like,
I
think if you think you have this massive advantage, you know, red zone, I get it. Yeah. But I think Georgia fans would even tell you that I think people freak out about his size, and week to week you'd go, all right, you know, he's a nice player. But I've seen him in the first round ahead of like a couple of the other names that you're touching on here. And I'm going, that's somebody just looking at the roster.
No,
like,
there's a really good one. What is his name? The dude from South Dakota State, Tucker Kraft, is a good player. And I haven't got to the Clemson kid. I know Michigan has one. There's a ton of them. But, you know, to me, Utah, Oregon State, Notre Dame, those guys all have like first round ability. So it's going to be a great year for tight ends.
I got to some of these names now for the tight ends. It sounds like everybody's like a Yellowstone character. I don't know. You know,
Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking
Kincaid.
Yeah, but you got Dalton Knox, Dallas Goedert.
Oh, existing current tight ends. You're going,
yeah, like like lately the tight. I don't know what's going on with the tight end names.
Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry is a good. It's a good Yellowstone name too.
That is a good one. All right, moving on. Next topic. Give me a player. I know you still have a ton of work to do. Months of work on this. Where. Like when I start looking at it and I think back to all the stuff that I watched this season, a guy who's projected to go middle of first, doesn't matter position, let's go non-quarterback though, who you're like, I know where he's going to go, I know where I'm going to grade him, but in a couple of years, I like him so much now, but it's like he's not allowed to be a top 10 pick.
Well, I think the curious name, and again, unless he's decided he's going back to school, I know the debate was out there, but Van Ness from Iowa. I don't know if he's made a declaration one way or the other. I was assuming he was coming out. Defensive lineman he's 6'5", he's 270 pounds. He does not start, which is one of those things where you're just like, how is this possible? Iowa defensive lineman, they move him up and down the line of scrimmage. He'll play on the edge. He'll play in the three. He'll play over the center, like in a tilted nose. But he's violent. He's explosive. You watch him in the Ohio State game. They've got two NFL tackles, and he kind of just runs them over. But you know, everybody's kind of there's always like that ceiling of like, how high do I push this guy up? He's playing 40-50% of the snaps at Iowa. But you kind of look at the traits and the flashes that you see, and it's like, okay, I could see this guy end up being a really good player. It's a similar thing if you go way in the way back machine of, remember, like Clay Matthews was like a 1 year starter coming out of USC. And it was like you had all those other guys in that group. You had all those other linebackers. And you're like, well, I can't elevate him over these other guys. The other guys are 3 year starters and a little bit more accomplished. But the skill set of Clay Matthews was better than Maluga, was better than Cushing, you know, all those guys. So it's an interesting debate.
Is he a wrestler too?
I don't have the background on him yet. I could see that. He's a violent, violent dude.
Yeah, I'm just looking him up here a little bit. He's got a T-shirt in one of these high school recruiting things. T-shirt just says, I hate QBs. He's like a kid, too. And now, Iowa, man, I give the team a lot of shit over the course. They are, depending on what you look at, between active and then where you're at in the season, they're ninth or tenth programs as far as active NFL players. I think that would surprise a lot of people. You know, at the top, it's Bama, it's Ohio State or Georgia or LSU for the second slot, depending on which week it is, you know, because you can get real technical about it. Iowa is a top 10 NFL feeder.
Yeah, they've done it in the trenches, offensive lineman, defensive lineman. And
They have defensive backs that have gone in.
I was
going
to say a bunch of safeties, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Mine's Joey Porter Jr. from Penn State.
That's a good one. Yeah. He's fun, long, competitive, tough.
Yeah. Big corners like that that are badasses on top of everything else. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if he's penalty prone or what, but I am back on corners. Like, if you can get me a couple corners in today's game and then somebody who can maybe survive against some of the bigger matchup guys that you have in the slot.
If you told me like the perfect recipe to me, and I think you're seeing it like with San Francisco, with Philadelphia. Even the Jets defensively, two great corners and freaking waves of defensive linemen, just tons of them. That's the way to go.
Yeah, when I watch Jets games now, I'll be like, oh, they've got him. Like, oh, that's right, they have that guy. That Jets defense is incredible, and some of the stuff Sauce Gardner's doing.
Dude, they don't even mess with him. Like, I'll find myself before the Charger games start. I'll always have a game like on my computer where I'm waiting for the game to start and call those games. And I like watching the Jets. I've got a good relationship with Joe Douglas, so I'll watch a lot of their games. I'm like, gosh, I want to see Sauce Gardner get a chance to make a play on the ball, but he gets no action. Like, they don't even look over there as a rookie. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's one of the weird deals where look, he went fourth and you'll be like, did he go too low?
He was my highest. So that's a great call because he, you know, you go through and you put a grade on a player, but then you sequence them and rank them, you know, in order. It's a great example because he was my highest graded player in that draft. I had the highest grade on him over anybody else in the draft. But, you know, in terms of courage, I think he ended up being my third player overall when you stack them, you know, when you actually put them all together. But I did not give a higher grade than the one I gave him.
Okay. All right. That was good. Do you have programs then where you go, when I want an O-lineman, I want him coming from this college? When it's a receiver, I want him coming from this college. Do you have preferable programs based on position when you do this?
I think it helps. I mean, I don't think you want to be beholden to it, but I always think like offensive linemen, I would lump the Big Ten together as a conference. You know, I always feel like, and we've talked about this in other teams I've worked with, but when you start 30, 40 games on the offensive line in the Big Ten, there's a pretty good chance you have a good combination of toughness and intelligence. Like you've got to, in order to play in that conference against the teams you're going to play, the style they play. Those are, you know, Big Ten offensive linemen that started a bunch of games, I'm in on those. Receivers, you know, what Brian Hartline's done, these are ready-made dudes coming out of Ohio State. I mean, not only talented, but they're polished and they're ready to have an immediate impact. So I think sometimes it can be position coaches from that standpoint. And stay at Ohio State with, you know, I think Larry Johnson has those guys pretty well developed. Saban's always had a reputation, and some people took it one of two ways. Oh, the DBs coming out of there are completely tapped. Like they're not going to get any better. They've had the best coaching you could possibly get. They are who they are. And other people look at that and say, this is great. I don't have to do anything. this guy's just ready to go. So you look at the same situation. Some people look at it as a positive. Some people look at it as a negative.
Yeah, I love the Saban ones because I heard a line one time. It was like, guarantees you a championship and a major surgery. Which I think was a little unfair. There was also this weird stretch where like Bama had like a bad run of first rounders.
Yeah.
And then it was trying to be turned into something bigger picture, which is totally inaccurate and not fair. And it was like, it's one of my favorite things about what we do is like, okay, something's happening. Could it just be happening or is it actually something? And when Bama had like a bad run of first rounders, Milner, you know, the defensive back, actually speaking of Jets defensive backs, and Marcel Darius, just he wasn't even close to what I thought he was going to be coming out of Bama. He still was okay.
Who was the linebacker that went to Tennessee? Out of Bama, was a gosh, what's his name? 54. He wore 54. It's a first round pick.
You guys in the numbers.
I'm gonna look it up. You gotta look it up.
Titans, Bama.
He didn't get a second contract.
All right, we got IT on this one. Rashad Evans, 2018.
Yeah. Right. No, another one who we thought, you know, we think about guys coming out, they thought he was gonna be big time dude. And I don't think he got a second contract there.
No, if I started, I mean, I guess I could just go down this. Do I want to do this? Just do a little.
Do you ever mess around on drafthistory.com, by the way?
I'm on it right now. It's a great site. So if I go, all right. Oh, you know what? This was my scouting. I was proud of myself on this one. It's funny. I'm trying to get down to the next page and I'm still at 2019.
Is that a few dudes?
This program, this is so stupid. Looking at the, like, we both know, but to see it,
oh, it's dumb.
Like, as I'm scrolling through it, this is so dumb. I remember I thought Fluker was overrated.
Yeah, I was not a big Fluker guy.
He was just so big that I knew everybody's gonna fall. Couldn't move. I saw him in person a couple times and I went, he's not really what everybody thought he was. And he still played, you know, he still played a while, but that's not what you're thinking of when you're taking him where you're taking him.
Some of these years, look at the number, just the sheer number of guys. You know who I would have bet had a much better career was OJ Howard. I liked OJ Howard coming out.
I was okay. Yeah. I don't know. Marlon was the highest rated. He went first to Baltimore. That was the first Bama player taken that year, Marlon Humphrey. I don't know if this is interesting to anybody.
I find it fascinating. Reggie Ragland. Now we're getting into it.
Yeah, maybe we can stop now. Oh, you know, here's the other one. This is the same Fluker year. That Chance Warmack didn't ruin people's lives for 10 years. But, you know, the other thing that we always forget is that some guys don't want to do this.
Yeah.
As long as, like, sometimes guys come in. Like, I was convinced Chance Warmack was going to be that guy at guard. He was probably one of my favorite players. Yeah, he was.
the exposed belly. He had a whole thing going on. He came in for Path of the Draft and came into studio, and he was like the most lovable dude. Like, just couldn't have been a better guy. He was one of those guys, like, you're kind of rooting for him, and then just kind of fizzled.
But I think the moral to all of this was, is when it was Bama, like, my whole point was, I think I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here for a little while. I don't know that I'm going to start labeling every Bama player that comes out in the first round as a potential bust, as if they're doing something wrong. Okay.
You know, here, is there one more program, though, before we move on? Utah. I can't have enough Utah guys. That's like King. Maybe that's why I'm in on Kincaid. I just think the head coach is so stinking tough and is such just a stud. I think it just like rubs off on all these dudes. They're physical. They're competitive, like all that stuff. Then there's like a little chip. There's like a little bit of a chip.
There's some like real edge to those dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's a little chip. So I'm backing you up here. I completely agree. I remember this group last year, beginning of the year, I was at home all day watching ball, and I went, let me just get out of the house. I went and a place across the street, grabbed a drink, and was just sitting there going, I think I fell in love with Utah tonight. It was like Rising just coming onto the scene last year.
Yeah.
And that whole group, and then that little white receiver was like 32. Anyway. Okay. Last thing here. Let's talk about the 21 QB class.
Yep.
We'll do whatever you want to do on this. So it's Zach, it's Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones. For the purpose of this, I don't really know that there's a ton to say about Trey Lance. We just all feel bad for him and hope this doesn't just derail everything.
Yeah.
Any hope for Zach Wilson?
I do. I don't know that it's a great fit there with what they're asking him to do and what he's struggling to do. And you can go into the draft process. Well, you can think that a guy is going to be a great rhythm timing thrower, which is what that offense, you know, that Shanahan scheme is, a rhythm timing offense. And, you know, accuracy is of the utmost importance. And he's shown that he's not functioning great in that environment. He's a big play guy. He's a play action shot guy who can extend plays. I think that works, you know, in certain environments and certain schemes and what you have. He's going to need a run game. I think that doesn't get talked about. I think everybody just kind of, you can show the swing pass that he underthrows. And like, this guy's never going to be any good. He can't make the most basic pass in the world. But then, I mean, you can look at four or five other just huge chunk plays that he's able to generate and create that not many guys can do. So I think he does have those strengths. But Ryan, they haven't had over 60 yards rushing in their last two games that he's played. So they continue to run the ball on first down. So you're taking a young guy who's not super accurate. You're putting him in second and 10 in obvious throwing situations where the windows get smaller and he's struggling. I'm like, I don't know that should be rocket science there. And you can see the confidence is, you know, it's weird when you feel like your fan base is almost rooting against you in some instances. And you can see him pulling the string a lot, which is him he's just freezing up a little bit. But the ability's still there. That's why I'm not totally punting on him.
Okay, Fields.
Fields is doing what he has to do right now to generate offense, which is just run all over the place. And it's impressive, but I don't think it's that sustainable. But I get that's what they have to do right now. So they need to put some other pieces around him, give him some help, and then maybe they can start backing off a little bit. I know the Jalen Hurts comparison gets made. He's going to need to continue to make those types of strides that Hurts has made. The difference is, I think Hurts had the ability to carry a little bit more of that run load the way he's put together and his history of running the ball like that. I don't think Justin's going to be able to physically hold up if they're going to ask him to carry the ball, 17, 18 times like he's been doing.
I know you recently did a deep dive on the Move the Sticks pod on Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
What has been the most impressive part of his growth and becoming, a real MVP candidate here now?
I think it's just the accuracy, like pretty simple. You know, he's anticipated throws and he's throwing with accuracy. And like, he's a great example. I could go back and try and find my report on him when he was coming out, but it was like, you can look at all the stuff that everybody kind of focusing on the things that he wasn't doing. And it's like, if you just look at the core things that he is and what he does, number one is he's incredibly smart and son of a coach, understands ball really, really well. So his work ethic was off the charts from everybody that you talked to. So you knew he's going to do that. He had the physical, ability to be able to throw, with velocity, had the ability to extend plays. That stuff was there. The stuff that you're dinging him on, some ball placement, some holding the ball too long, lack of anticipation. Like he worked through those things. So it's kind of like, if you give me a guy that's incredibly smart and competitive and has tools, like those guys figure it out. That's like the Josh Allen Mahomes thing.
Okay. Last one, Mac Jones.
Mac, I go back and looked at my notes on him and it was like touch timing, you know, toughness, full field reads. I didn't think he had any twitch to him. I thought things sped up on him. I thought
bad tackler.
Oh man, that was brutal. What's he going to do with that thing if he gets it, by the way? What's he doing with that thing? He's like catching a punt with no blockers with your quarterback.
It's like that Johnny Knoxville skit.
What was that? What did he do?
He was on Jackass. And he returned a punt by himself against, I think it was Tennessee. Or no, he was dressed up. It was against USC. He was dressed up as a vole.
Okay.
And he just was returning punts and getting his ass kicked.
I don't know what he's going to do. The other thing about that play is that was, do you remember like trick plays where it probably was in college where if the end zone was blue and you were wearing blue on blue uniforms, they had the guy go lay down in the blue. Like Chandler Jones is in the middle of that logo and he very much does blend in the kind of the logo there. So well done on his part.
Okay, I like that. So it doesn't sound like you're super high on Mac long term.
No, I don't know how high the ceiling is there. I just don't think he has any like elite trait. He doesn't have an elite arm. He doesn't have a lot of twitch to create and extend. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little bit surprised like that he hasn't been a little bit more, you know, kind of even keel. He's got to be frustrated as all get out with the Patricia Judge thing. But like, he's got to kind of ease off a little bit.
Need a little bit more of a resume sort of to lighten everybody up.
I think at some point in time, the accomplishments have to exceed the theatrics, you know?
Yes. That's one of my all-time athlete rules. Like, you can do it. I don't know about you.
Yeah, you can say, well, Tom Brady did it in this uniform for this team for a long time. Yeah, well.
Yeah, you're right.
He's allowed to do that.
When's your first mock-up?
I think I have like January 10th, I want to say, somewhere around there.
Okay, looking forward to it.
I've got a lot to watch, buddy.
Well, you know, at least you're not going to be busy the next couple of weeks. So come back on again. We always appreciate it again. Move the Sticks. Enjoy Xander Bogaerts, all right?
Thanks, buddy.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet.
What's up?
I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Today's life advice is presented by Chase Freedom Unlimited. Unlimited 1.5% cash back is just the beginning. Earn 5% on travel purchased through Chase, 3% on dining, including takeout, 3% at drugstores, and 1.5% on everything else. How do you cash back? Learn more at chasefreedom.com. Restrictions and limitations apply. Cards are issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC. Life advice. The email is lifeadvicerr@gmail.com. All right. Let's hear it for the ladies. Hello. Hey. I found the pod last year via Bill Simmons. I've added it to the rotation. All right. Writing what I've deemed to be a rare female life advice email. Yes, they are rare. Kyle, you always get a little weird.
I'm sitting up straighter right now. I can tell you that.
Where's the gym? Okay. It is rare. No impressive gym stats. Former D1 athlete. Additional info. I'm 30. I'm a Boston sports fan living in New York City. Successful career, friends, dog, etc. Sounds like she's got it all. Not that one thing. The Boston thing in New York is not a big deal at all. Like, you think it's a big deal, and you're like, no, it isn't. In May, I broke up with my boyfriend of 2 years. Let's call him Zach. All right, so May. So, yeah, we're talking seven months. Broke up with Zach, cut off all communication, which is normal when you break up. Unfortunately, my ex has my email address and still sends cryptic emails such as, I can't believe you blocked me, and, quote, I feel so left out of your life. He's a Jets fan, so I guess he's used to constant disappointment.
Wow. She's cool, funny, yeah. Successful, wow. And cool. Wow.
Wow. In my opinion, when you break up with no kids or other major factors tying you together, no further communication is necessary or healthy. This leads to question one. Is it okay to reach out to one of my ex's friends to see if they can encourage Zach to move on? I do not want to make any of our mutual friends feel awkward or drag them into a relationship that ended 7 months ago. For some context, I was pretty close with his group of guy friends. I was often invited to the boys' days because I love sports and sports betting versus gossiping about the latest episode of The Bachelor with the other girlfriends.
Or Bill Simmons. Hey, it's not just them.
Wow. I still talk to a few of Zach's friends, mostly in relation to sports, but feel there's an open line of communication where I can bring this up. Would you guys feel awkward if your buddy's ex reached out to you?
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Short answer, yes.
Does this completely break bro code? Next question, less important. Feel free to skip. We're not going to do that to you. Any advice you have on how to organically meet guys in real life would be greatly appreciated. I've tried the apps, but have lost motivation to navigate creepy opening lines. When I'm out, I try to be open and strike up conversations, but my girlfriends think my flirting approach makes guys think I'm just trying to be friends. Oh, so it's like a toned down, flirty,
punching in the arm sort of thing? Yeah. Like punching him in the arm a lot?
Hat on backwards, two Coors Lights, calling dudes by their last name. Come on, Russillo!
A lot of back pats.
I was being very specific. There are some cute guys at the gym, but after listening to the pod, I'm terrified to interrupt anyone mid-lift. Photo attached. All right. What do we have here? We have a very attractive female. She's got an open back dress going on, a little woodsy landscape in the background, Aperol spritz. What we're going to do, we're going to make sure this happens. Do not be a dude asking if you can meet her and have Kyle forward you the email. Let's just get that one out of the way immediately. You're cute. So guess what you can do? You can go up to
whatever you want.
Gym. Yeah. So
you can do whatever you want.
You're going to get away with it. You know, I know the pay gap sucks, but a couple W's in your column where you can do pretty much whatever you want. So I don't know. The dating advice thing, we don't do that great of a job with the dudes. I couldn't even fathom to go down that road. I'd no. like to actually, I've thought about this, Kyle, and I don't know. I'm hesitant to ever bring it up, but like I thought it might be worth bringing on some dating expert, a female, but I don't know who that person is. Like, I don't want to just
do it. What is a dating expert? Somebody who's dated a lot of people?
I don't know. You remember that dating show? Like there was a serious girl from the past where I ended up getting sucked into all the Bravo stuff. I'll admit it. I couldn't quit that shit. And I was watching it all with her. And then there would be that Patty who was the millionaire matchmaker. And I just hate watch that show. And honestly, I had way too much of a problem with that show because they had Paul Davis on, who used to play for Michigan State and was on the Clippers for like a week. It was longer, but, and she introduced him as NBA star. And I was like, come on.
Like, you've always had a problem with that. You had a problem with the Bachelor guys, ex-pros.
It's one of my least favorite things in society. Yeah. Guys pretending that their pro career was way more than it was, especially minor league baseball player. Like I get there's not, you know, if you're a G League, maybe you'll put pro basketball player on the Instagram profile. Football, it's a little harder, you know, played for the Rhine Fire.
That's right.
You know, but baseball players, I mean, some of you guys are listening too. Like when you put professional baseball player and you haven't made it past Reading, like I guess technically it's true.
You do get checks to play baseball. That's true.
Right. But when somebody asks you who you played for and you're saying Altoona, do you notice the disappointment in everybody's face?
No.
Right? Or on the DM thread, like, you know, because when you say professional whatever, the assumption is that you're in the bigs. So I'm not trying to get in a fight with all the minor leaguers that listen to this whole thing. But that was why we won't have Patty on. I don't even know what she's up to. But somebody else, maybe younger, that could give the dudes some tips, because I'm not that great at it, that's for sure. As far as giving advice,
I'd be into that. I like to sit in on that one if I could. I usually take a back seat, but I have some questions of my own. So,
yeah. Well, you're on most pods, so I imagine you'd be here for that one.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. All right. So let's get back to the bigger dilemma here. You're being really nice about this. Now, we don't know the context of the emails. They sound a little weird. I wonder what time he's sending them. Honestly, when you go full cutoff and you dumped him, then, you know, it's just whoever gets dumped is the one that's kind of a little bit. I am awesome to break up with. Like, you're not going to hear from me.
I love that about me, too.
That's a
great quality I have in myself.
Yep. Yep. Not going to be a ton going on there. I guess, can't you block an email too?
That's what I was going to say. That's it. And what is he? Michael Scott, his forwards are so hilarious. You want to keep him on the list? I don't understand why you can't just add it to the list of blocked things consider that you have him on.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I think there's part of that, but I don't think there's anything wrong. I think we should tell her from the male perspective on this, that there's nothing wrong for you to go up to one of the friends and just say, hey, look, we may as a one-time deal, right? I don't think you're breaking bro code. I mean, I'd ask though, are the emails that bad? Are they that annoying? Like, it sounds like they're just kind of sad. And so, I mean, you're talking zero contact. You're not even going to send you're not going to get a Merry Christmas one, right? And by the way, when did Thanksgiving turn into exes checking in? I'm over that one.
Everyone's in town.
No, but I'm just talking like, long and like, hey, hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Like, save that shit for Christmas. Like, we don't need to turn Thanksgiving into this one, too. Although the ultimate mind fuck is the New Year's Eve one. It's like you just right around the fucking ball drop, and it's like, hey, thinking about you. And you're like,
that's right. Ruined my New Year, man.
Make out with some four. Fuck off. All right. I don't think there's any problem. I think we just need to answer it. And I think we already have. We've told seven different stories within. I don't know where I got that bell drop from. Is that Australian, perhaps? Anyway.
That could be the tough accent. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, Scottish.
I watched The Vanishing. Maybe it popped in my head from that. So I think she's totally fine. Kyle, thoughts?
I mean, I would save the dude intervention for like a drug problem, gambling problem, something like that. I don't think it was that though.
I thought it was.
I know it's not a dude intervention. It's just sort of like, you know, if that guy's in a group chat, there's a chance it makes it in there. I mean, you just have to say the guy that you're going to go up to, is he going to be able to discreetly do this? Or is this going to be like, or is this guy's weird emails going to get thrown in? Not that you're going to send screenshots or anything, but like if you give one of his dude friends the situation, like, do you know that his dude friend's going to handle it, you know, in an adult manner? Or is he going to be like, hey, man, Stacy just hit me up and said, you've been bugging her for the last 7 months. And now that's the new running joke. Like, you know, is like, I'm so left out of your life going to be popping up in the group. I don't know. I think it'd be way easier to just block him because maybe he's texting you other stuff and calling your number just to hear it ring. But how would you know? Because you blocked him. My point is you wouldn't even have this on your brain if you just blocked his email. And then if you started getting emails from johnsmith1@gmail.com instead of his name, then maybe you could talk to somebody. But I think the easiest step would just be to do this. Because if you don't want him to be embarrassed in front of his friends, maybe you do. But if you don't want to, I would wait until there's really no other place to turn. That's just what I would say. But I think whatever.
Yeah, I don't. You're right. I mean, it could be because it depends. Like, if they're still really tight with him, they maybe turn. I don't know. I don't think they'd turn on you. I mean, the other thing is maybe ask one of the ones that's in a relationship.
Yeah, that's a great way to pick them.
Right. Because the guy that might be single would be like, hey, guess who hit me up? You know, guys, it could be really fucking weird. Like, I actually was just asking you as a friend to like do me this favor. No, I don't want to sleep with you. Like, yeah, dude, she does.
Too wise when she said, hey.
She does.
You know what that means.
Makes a ton of sense. Celtics are doing well. She's fucking feeling it. Hit me up. Like, dude, I got to talk to you. She said something about emails, but I'm pretty sure she wants to bang. All right. I don't know. We were super helpful there.
I think we were. I think you got two great options.
I think we're pro your whole theory here that, you know, but I guess we're both asking, like, how bad is it? If it's bad enough, you're emailing the show asking us, then it's probably pretty bad. The email seems sort of sad if the ones you shared with us are the general tone of season one of these emails. But, you know, I don't know. You could also just say, hey, dude, stop emailing.
No more.
She's probably trying to do that, though. She's probably trying to do that. All right. So, okay. Next one. Help wanted, I'm fat. All right. Real simple. Keep it brief. Former college and small-time pro athlete. All right.
Perfect.
Oh, soccer in Europe. Yeah, that counts. Or does it? I don't know. I don't know that one as well. Is there a Pawtucket?
We would need Steve for this. We would
Pawtucket need Steve FC? Athleticism is always a big strength for me compared to others since I grew into my body in college. For years, I followed different diets, different methods of adding, dropping weight. And I've seen a trainer for nearly 15 years now. I'm 29. You've had a trainer since you were 14? I know my way around a gym. And in the past, I've known my way around food intake. All right, so you eat a lot. I'm 6'2". Playing weight was always 200. Post-playing weight, once I moved to New York City, was always 220-ish, maybe 225 max, but felt fine. Since COVID, I've been consistently trending higher. I'm now 247. I'm not proud of myself. No pants or work clothes fit. I feel awful physically all the time. I think it may have hit my rock bottom after a fall of sitting and watching football. I just want to get back to my solid weight where my current wardrobe fits, and I don't always think about dieting. I've tried past diets that have worked. I've cut out alcohol for the most part. I've tried to focus on making changes. Did you cut out alcohol because of the weight or because you don't want to go out anymore? But when in the past I could cut a quick 10 to 15, it means pounds in a week or two, or fully commit to an extended period of time, I'm really struggling to string together a couple good days at this point. I mentally just feel defeated and I don't even know where to start anymore. I do not have much on my plate, pun intended, for this upcoming January or February, and really asking for some advice on how mentally to get back up off the mat and start going in the right direction again. Happy holidays, and thanks for all that you do. Okay. All right. A little tough love. You were mad enough to send the email in, right? We've talked about this. Like, there's nothing. Everybody is different, right? It sucks. It sounds like you might have one of the metabolisms where now, whatever. Clearly, the eating part of this is fucking you up. There's a couple different things you can try. All right. When I want to do something new, I have to do it. Like, I'm studying a foreign language right now. I have to do a little bit every day. And if I get through those 30 days or so of doing that, then it feels weird when I'm not doing it. Like, when I first tried to write, I was like, holy shit, this sucks. And then when I did it and I thought about it and I'd write down a line or I'd write down an idea or a scene outline or could this person be this or could this character work here or is the twist here? Or what could happen here at the end? Once I started doing it regularly, it felt weird when I didn't do it. When I went a few days without doing it, I was like, oh man, you're slipping up, okay? There's also another part of like the working out thing where, and again, this isn't for everybody, so don't get pissy about it, but sometimes it's like getting yourself new sneakers and get some new workout gear, which isn't going to fit when you lose all this weight. See what I just did there? Planted a little seed of positivity. Seeing that stuff would be like, all right, I'm fucking doing this. You've already had a trainer. You already know how to work out. You're not really small, okay? So you're overweight and you're going to go to the gym. So there shouldn't be any anxiety about that thing. I think the worst thing for the gym isn't the person that's super overweight. It's the guy that's never done it, trying to do it later on in his life, is skinny as hell and feels super fucking awkward, has all this anxiety about going into the gym. You don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And by the way, I was that kid when I was in high school. So like I'm speaking from experience of like, it's the worst fucking feeling. You're like, I feel like the biggest loser ever, but you're in there. Okay. You're in there. So fuck everybody. You're in there and you decided to make a change. You've already done this. Okay. Now in the eating thing, stop eating before you go to bed. I can already fucking tell you do that. The other thing is go get the fancy juices. All right, get the $10, $12 juices, put them in the fridge, start your day, don't eat anything in the morning, drink the juice and have that juice take you after the workout. Again, I don't know what your schedule is, but like, don't eat anything until you eat lunch. All right. You need to figure out a way to get to the caloric deficit that is the opposite of whatever it is you're doing right now. And like when you said you cut out, that's great that you cut out drinking, but like, are you just not going out or doing anything? And is it because you thought the alcohol was making you fat, or you were eating because you were shit-faced and eating awful stuff? Because I'll tell you, just sitting around doing nothing all the time and not doing anything, like you should want, there's a social aspect of this where you should want to look better. And now I'm just wondering if all this plays together, you're not going out because you don't feel good about yourself. Dude, I'm telling you, when you eat, I'm not like the greatest eater, but when I eat that awful meal, it reminds me why I don't eat it that way all the time because I'm not used to it. I will smash 2 double cheeseburgers. I'll just fucking do it. All right. And then I'm like, whoop, not going to do that again for a while. And you're eating probably so badly that you're not even like noticing the difference. So I'm making some assumptions here, but I don't think they're totally off base. You already have it in you. This isn't, hey, I've never worked out. I've never done anything athletically. I don't know what that's about. I'm 35 and I'm overweight and I'm pissed. That guy has it way worse than you have it. You have the foundation of some of these things that you've done in the past. We should be able to revert back to it. So get fucking pissed at yourself. You want to be 280 in another couple of years? You know you don't. But if you keep sitting around eating like shit, never doing anything, that's exactly what's going to happen. I know that was harsh, but that was because he was an athlete and he can take it.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised what you said. The you stopped with the booze and you looked at your food. I mean, the booze, I mean, I've looked at my food. The booze is the only thing holding me back. But yeah, I thought that was going to work. Now I'm a little worried for when I finally cut out the booze.
Wait, what?
No, I'm saying that guy, when he said he was like, I stopped drinking. I mean, that's what I'm assuming is holding me back. Now I'm a little worried that that's not going to be the only answer. Yeah, but whatever. This is about this guy. Yeah, I got
no. But sometimes it's about you. Wait, are you a bad eater, Kyle?
I'm doing a lot more chicken. Was a big red meat guy. There's a beautiful delicatessen right on the other side of my building. It's basically sometimes I'll go. It's Frolic, Trader Joe's. Don't even know what I get there sometimes. Just like that looks good, but it's always under like $70. And then I walk home with that. And then there's the fucking delicatessen staring me right in the face. And it's like, God, there's a prime rib. But now I still go in there, but I'm getting the boneless chicken breast. So I've been happy with that. That's been about a month in progress. So that's
so no more bone in chicken breast for you?
No, I'm just no more fucking boneless ribeye is what I'm saying. That's been, so I'm like, once the booze falls off, watch out. But now I'm worried that because that didn't happen for this guy, now I don't know what's going to happen. But I've always been sort of...
I think he's telling us he sat around and done nothing. All right? Because he was like, since COVID and whatever. And I know some people are going to think I was a little too harsh with that. I was doing that for a reason. I'm hoping he listens to that and goes, fuck yeah. Because I think athletes respond to that, unless you're out of the Knicks rotation. All right. Today's life advice was presented by Chase Freedom Unlimited. Earn big time with Chase Freedom Unlimited. Earn 5% on travel purchase through Chase, 3% on dining, including takeout, 3% at drugstores, and 1.5% on everything else. How do you cash back? Chase, make more of what's yours. Restrictions and limitations apply. Cards are issued by JPMorgan, Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC. That'll do it for Life Advice and Daniel Jeremiah. Hope everybody had a great show. We had a blast. And we will talk to you on Friday. Ryan Russell, the podcast, right here on Spotify.